100.
Ever a model train guy, Simmer?
Oh, absolutely. One of the cool things as a kid, when we had a basement, I don't even think it was finished, JR, my dad would take a piece of large, I'm assuming it was plywood, but he would hang it to the ceiling to create kind of a platform that was probably 2 or 3 feet off of the ground. And then we'd do a train track kind of set up there and do the whole thing. So it was pretty cool, actually. Why are you laughing, Hammer?
Well, because my grandfather was had a huge model train. Okay, so this is when I would have been between the ages of 7 and maybe 13 that he got big into trains. But he had like a velvet rope around the freaking table so nobody could get within 6 feet of that model train set and what he built. Like he was, he was old man Winter.
Did our comedian friend there have it nailed with the every guy who's got a train set always has to have a tunnel?
Yeah. He had a tunnel.
And I can still smell it, guys. There was, you could put in where the smoke would come out, right? Do you remember that?
Oh, well, yeah.
And you'd have that. And then the other thing on there, the texture of the grass that you were supposed to put, right? You remember
very
that?
Very rough.
Hey, yeah, and you'd have that. And then I was also, I think, vintage, very much into the Army men back in the day, JR. Mm. I still remember having my strong Guns of Navarone, which was the German side of it. And then, of course, you had the Allied soldiers, and you set that up.
Your Army men?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then the Germans were in that, but they were
the
always
tan?
No, they were gray.
Okay.
We're not going in with Rommel. It's not the desert. We're not in the desert here. This is good old hand-to-hand combat in Europe. So we need a strong kind of gray
strong
uniform.
Gray.
Yeah, that's what they were in.
Did you ever have a man in a parachute?
Oh, God, yeah.
So, Hammer, you know this one?
Okay. I know
so
what you guys
this
are
is
talking
a little,
about.
This is a little plastic guy, army guy, right? And attached to him is this really flimsy parachute-type thing. Yeah. And so what you'd do is you'd tuck it into your kite, and you'd get your kite way up in the air, and then you'd yank your kite, and the hope was that the man in the parachute would pop out of the kite, and the parachute part wouldn't rip apart at some point and actually work. It never did. I challenge anybody out there who ever had a man in a parachute and did the thing, and listen, throwing it off the roof of your house doesn't count. I'm talking about getting it up there on a kite or the top of an apartment building and throwing that thing off and it actually working. I don't think it ever happened.
No,
I think whoever manufactured that had the cat by the ass and just was taking money.
No, he had a lot of bad falls, right?
Oh.
Where he just come and then
everyone was a bad fall.
Yeah,
love the concept. Though.
If I was asked from an error standpoint, JR, which theater did you find more fascination with? The European one, which was basically the Brits against Germany, or was it the
war in the desert?
Or was it Japan against the United States?
Always Europe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, it may have to do with my heritage, right? Okay. My dad would tell stories from back in the Second World War.
No, I always say that because was it Baba Black Sheep? Remember that bad boy? They were in that theater was obviously against the Japanese. And so that there, man, that was pretty cool back in the day. Now, as far as the actual aircraft, well, there was nothing better than watching in Europe, right? That's the fascination we had with the Messerschmitt and the Luftwaffe and everybody else involved in that, not to mention the strong planes that they ended up having on the British side.
Somebody just texted and said the grumpiest men ever were the guys who ran the model trains at the Carp Fair. I don't remember that.
Oh,
but to speak to your point, Hammer, of if you've got one, no one was allowed to touch it.
Well, no. And then the next phase of that, when my son was young, was Thomas the Tank Engine, which was not nearly as made quality, but it was certainly very expensive.
Oh, the other one,
JR, is I'm having flashbacks now of my different soldier men. The other one that was really, really important was the guy on the radio, right? The guy that was holding. Remember how many of those you'd have? Hey,
in terms of the Green Army men models,
that was a big deal. Hey, and a lot of times his antenna would either be chewed off or would be gone.
Well, you need the snipers too. You need the ones that lie prone, right?
Man.
Those are big. You got to get them high. They need the high ground.
Snipers are real. That was
such good memories. All right, welcome back, everybody. 7:18 here on a Friday morning with J.R. Simmer and Hammer, Dave Poulin. Hopefully defrosted from his skate on the canal. I'm not sure if it was yesterday before the game broadcast or 2 days ago, but Dave will join us coming up next hour. Duke Ellington will talk NFL playoffs with us after 9. Some wrenches on this wrench-throwing Friday. Could you please throw a wrench at Michael Callum and Mr. Jones? comes from Unsigned this morning.
I'm Bruce Boudreaux, and the Sens are in session.
Mike from Peterborough. Good morning, guys. I want to throw a wrench to everyone that brags about having a bath. As a tall guy, there are many perks for being tall, but being able to have a bath isn't one of them. Also, another wrench for people who can fly coach comfortably. Showers only, Mike, in Peterborough.
Why are you so pissy?
Soft and purposeless.
All right, so there's, here we go. Sorry. Hey, boys, a wrench to DJ Smith for playing that fence post, Josh Brown. Just dig a hole and plant him in front of the net and wrap him with barbed wire. He was walked at least three times last night. What a joke on the fans. That comes from Unsigned.
The old lungs are barking at me up here in the Alti.
Not happy with, well, listen, there are lots of games we complain about Josh Brown, and he was... He was not great last night, but he was, if you're going to complain about the complainables, he's not at the top of the list, at least from last night.
No.
He can slide Ottawa's tendies into top spot from last night.
And I thought Holden really struggled last night, Jaron. And again, I'll also go Pat, and this is kind of what happens. I'm at a spot where, and I am said about the right-handed defenseman, the list of mistakes has, to me, been so many things tactically and player-wise. And I thought Lloydy, I listened into the pregame show, brought up a real good point. Like, I mean this so sincerely, is that when Dylan Hetherington was in the lineup for a lower end skill mobility guy, that was kind of exactly what I want. Like, the guy had such a presence, he'd grab a hold of you and just thunder you. Like, that really fit the mold of, and I just don't really, again, first of all, from a personnel standpoint with Josh Brown, I recognize he's trying to play JR. It's not easy. You're a big man, right? When he gets up and running, he's actually not a bad skater. You're trying to figure it all out. But as far as any type of a presence on the ice, there's zero. And in the case of Hetherington, I really felt that. I felt like he's kind of like a bigger Boro, where he kind of grabs a hold of you and he's going to, you know, thunder you. That's what I felt when Hetherington was in the lineup.
Wrench to DJ for treating the fan base like we're idiots, telling us that Zaitsev is elite and Brown is tough and keeps players off the goalie. Like, come on, who are you kidding? He's so set on being right that he's hurting the team. That's from Triple D, the original.
Yeah, I know he's a big guy. I like big guys.
And you know, whatever it is, JR, the decisions, you can fall on your sword. And I really feel in the case of Guy Boucher that it was like, I am never going to change. They have decided, for whatever reason, to put Stutz at center. How they did it, when they did it, hey, they've done it. So good on them. They decided when they, you know, said they weren't going to put Branstrom on the right side, they have. Now, I say, well, why were you doing this way back? But at least they're willing to do it, right? I mean, that's the one thing I will say. And, you know, I'm having some fun with it, but at least it's happened. And now the results and the positive part of it, and like everything else, and I've said about DJ Smith, you come into this business as a head coach in the National Hockey League, takes you 3 to 5 years to learn the league, to learn the coaching, and that's just all part of the whole thing. So I totally respect that. It's nice to see, for whatever reason, we can kind of argue why the changes have happened, and most of it's been because of injury, but at least they're happening. In the case of Stutzla and Branstrom, well, that's exactly. And both young men right now are thriving in their new positions.
Okay, here. Sorry, I had a wrench and it disappeared, and now it's back. Here we go. Wrench to Josh Norris for being so good in a contract year. That's from RJ in Fitzroy.
To community.
Shut up, Riley. I withdraw what I didn't hear me say.
Never lose that one either.
Please don't, yeah.
Please, yes. Josh Norris, two more goals last night. He's got 18 now in 32 games so far this year. He is on pace for 40-plus goals, and as RJ mentioned, in a contract year, has put himself in a very strong bargaining position.
Yeah, and recently, JR, I would watch him, and I'm not saying, wow, but you really have to, and Brady Tkachuk made the comment. Like, last night, you're going head-to-head with Sidney Crosby, and you're holding your own, and offensively, you're doing well. Well, there's nothing more that I can ask out of a young centerman than that.
Absolutely. Josh Norris's night last night, the two goals, he played 18 minutes. He had 6 shots, 9 attempts, and 71% in the circle as well. That is an elite night for Josh Norris. He ends up with two of the goals, almost had a hat trick goal as well as the Sens comeback. Falls short. They were down 5-1. They got back to 5-4. It was shades of all they were missing was old daddy to come in and get the game tire and the game winner, like the 5-1 game against the Leafs last year. That's all they were missing.
A little breakaway from the Zoobster as well.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. But the story of the night last night, unfortunately, was a lot of this.
As a quick shot, and that eludes Gustafson. I'm not sure how he didn't spot that. And it's now 5-1.
Yeah, that was the fifth goal for Pittsburgh. That would make sense on a 5-1 game. That was the fifth goal. But I would say four of them were... I wouldn't put them at howler level. Like, howler is... that's Vesa Toskala from the other end of the ice. That's a howler.
Well, the howler was the goal against Buffalo the other night, the first goal. Like, that was a full... It was just a full-on clunker.
Like, last night, it's just... I'm trying. Let me go through all. So the first one is where Holden's kind of the guy's kind of battling for it, Simon, and then he just wires it. Now it's a nice shot.
Bad gap control, but as you said, you got to be
out for
this. Well, that first period for Forsberg after what you went through in Buffalo, and for the most part, Jerry's been consistent. But the psyche of your club, like I got to be on edge here. I got to be really, really aggressive come first period. If you beat me, you beat me. But it can't be a clunker.
No. And then the second one was the shot in from the point that had the slight tip, couldn't control it. Malkin scores. The third one he lets in is a shot from the goal line that he deflects into his own net. He gets pulled, and the Sens get lucky in that the play is challenged and it's offside. He gets pulled anyway, which he should have been. So it was three goals on eight shots, but only two go against his record. Gustafsson comes in. And then is it Matheson gets two goals on Gustafsson? The second one you heard right there. Both of them, again, those are stoppable shots. Yeah, they have to be. The only one that was a good goal, in my opinion, was Crosby.
Yeah, and
so he has five goals against, and four of them are not good.
Yeah, and that was some poor D-zone coverage. But as far as Gustafsson as well, and well, both goaltenders last night, but Gus is throwing everything out about 3 feet. Everything's a rebound. I thought early on he looked square, he looked comfortable, and he's still pretty much doing that. But he's lost some of that sharp edge, and I guess you kind of look at that as well, JR, as you run through COVID. Run through where he's at, has not played a whole lot of hockey, and he certainly has not looked sharp before this. I don't know how the game's down in Belleville. By all accounts, played pretty well, but for last night, and if Mr. Murray is healthy and ready to go tomorrow night, yeah, I feel like that's kind of pivotal time there because you're almost out of options, and unfortunately for all three goaltenders, you've got one guy in Forsberg at 907, and you've got Gus the Bus and Matt Murray at 892. Well, history tells us that I don't care who that is, you're not going to go anywhere in the National Hockey with those goalie numbers.
Matt Murray has to play tomorrow night. Yeah. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's got to get back in the net, and he's got to take the net. He's got a wide-open opportunity. There's no reason that the coach should be even thinking about going in any other direction than Matt Murray right now, because the other guys are just going, they're going south in a hurry, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I guess it's part of your personality, JR. History tells me of goaltenders that I've been with, and the highest end, of course, Eddie Belfour and Ole Kolzig would be, I know both of them, and I know Ole a little bit better, that if he missed games, that's fine. Injuries happen. For where his team is at, he'd come to us and he'd say, listen, I'm ready to rock and roll here on the Friday. I'm going to play against Washington. Well, he's not going to because he was with Washington, but I'm going to play. I want the net. I want to grab a hold of it, and that's unfortunately, and I don't know if we'll hear today that Murray's going to test it, and we'll see how he's feeling, and we'll check back.
Get in
on
the net.
We'll check back. I know. But
get in the net. Yeah, I know, but... Get in the net.
Okay. But that's unfortunately...
Get in the net.
Even if it's Koskinen?
No, Matt Murray.
Get out of the net. Get out of the net.
Indeed. We can get to that story in just a second. Now, from a more positive point of view, you mentioned the two Norris goals last night. Erik Brännström, again, breaking his career high in terms of ice time. He got 23 minutes. Now, Ottawa's chasing the game for most of it, so it makes sense as a more offensively gifted defenseman. He's going to get more ice time, but also reflects the confidence the coach has in him. Here's DJ on Erik Brännström's game.
He continues to get better confidence. He's making plays. Him and Chabby, when they get on that line, especially, you know, when we get faceoffs in their zone, are proven to be, a danger. The creating plays. And I think it's part of his development. I mean, he's at the age now where, you know, he's not the youngest guy on the ice. He's played a lot of games, and you can see he's just so much more confident.
It really is. I mean, and you pointed out, many people have, right? It's almost like a lot of these things that we've seen evolve in Ottawa, be it Stützle at center, now Erik Brännström, well, the ice time, A, but B, playing on the offside opposite of Shabbat, which he himself had said from the start, I feel more comfortable as a left shot playing on the right side, just his personal preference. They had pigeonholed him that they wanted to play the left side. Both he and the general manager were on the same page about that. And then by happenstance, because COVID and injuries, et cetera, all of a sudden, well, we're a little short, and especially with offensively skilled guys on the right side, let's throw Brännström over there, and whoa, wow, he's playing really good. Like, It's almost it is. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's like their hands has been forced into the decisions that should have been made all along.
It really is, Chair. And as I said, people may listen in and think I'm being sarcastic or whatever else. You can only look past so many of these situations and not ask. I would love to know the rationale of a gentleman that played very little in the National Hockey League, was a hardworking defenseman in DJ Smith, and a general manager that didn't play much, which doesn't matter. You can learn. But I said at the time, I'd love to know your theory, because nobody else that I've ever talked to in hockey that has played defense or has
Mike
been
Babcock.
Involved. Well, exactly. Okay, and that's fine. But this theory, when a young defenseman that you've made a major trade says, you know, I'm actually more comfortable on the right side, and the two of you have decided that you're going to develop him on the left side, but you know what I'm also going to do? I'm going to put you out with Josh Brown, because that's really going to help your development. Yeah, you look at that and you just say to yourself, how could it be possible? And as simple as that, this would never, and I repeat, never have happened if Zaitsev didn't get hurt. Like, think about that. Like, it's not even a chance. It wouldn't even have happened. Zaitsev would be playing with Shabbat, and Holden would be playing with Zub, and Branstrom would be down in that spot. He has now gone into that spot, and like I said, it just really is. It's hard to explain, because the same thing with Stutzla. You can backtrack, and you can tell me this is a plan all along. Well, as I said, I'd never heard a word of it. When you said the season went south was because you had Norris, and you're 2 and 3 centers are gone. Well, what, was he going to be the fourth line center? And once again with Branstrom, you were quite simply arriving at a point and getting lucky because Zaitsev is out, right? I mean, there's no other way this is going to happen, right?
I don't think so.
Well, no. I mean, no. There was nothing that pointed to it. I mean, hey, Zaitsev is one of the elite shutdown defensemen. He was going to play with Shabbat. So, like I said, but it has happened, and hopefully everybody learns from it. But as I say, it really does make you shake your head sometimes.
All right. So 6-4 is the final. Pittsburgh wins it over Ottawa, which has a pair of games this weekend. Washington tomorrow, Columbus on Sunday. Both games on the road, and then they'll come back for a game against Buffalo on Tuesday, and that will start a 4-game homestand. And so the update and the announcement from the Ontario government yesterday regarding capacity restrictions going forward as they start to lift things a little bit piece by piece was not good news for the owners of sports teams in Ontario, given whatever else has been announced or has been allowed already. So until January 31st, everything remains as is right now, as in no fans. Starting January 31st until February 21st, you will be limited to 500 fans. So this is NHL, this is Raptors, this is Belleville Senators, this is Ottawa 67s. You're maxing out at 500 fans. From February 21st to March 14th, at that point you can go to 50% capacity. So for the Sens, up to about 9,000. And then after March 14th, they could go back to potentially full capacity. Now, this is all dependent on how we continue to do as far as the virus goes and the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. Again, things appear, at least in Ontario, to be trending in the right direction. This is the reason that the announcements were made yesterday. Now, what's interesting is, so restaurants as of January 31st, and we're all glad to see restaurants back on board. Hard to think of why it's 10 days from now, but it's 10 days, so it is open. They're at 50%, okay? And I'm thinking to myself, so a restaurant, and we all think of it, a typical nice restaurant that you can go in, pick whatever your favorite restaurant is, right? And how big the square footage is in that. So they're allowed to be half full. What is the difference between a restaurant and a hockey rink, just in terms of the actual size of the facility, let alone how much air circulation, if that's, and that would be a big thing I would think that they're concerned about, the air circulation, the ability to spread out in an 18,000, in the case of the Sens, an 18,000 seat hockey rink compared to a restaurant, which might seat, 50 people. Yeah. Well, what sense does that make?
Well, my thought on this, Tara, first of all, I understand if you feel this is going to be spread based on a mass event where, in the case of Toronto, if you have a sold-out building, I can...
I'm not talking about sellout.
Oh, no, no.
I'm talking 50%,
no,
like the restaurants.
No,
is it different?
No, but I would... My analogy personally is I don't understand why, and someone sent capacity at Costco is 1,300 people. That's the one I go back to. That I understand the restaurant one.
Yep.
I can't for the life of me understand how you can rationalize that. And
you
I don't,
can't.
Well, you that but that, you know what I mean. That's the one. I mean,
you shop at Costco. You know, now you go there when it's a massive snowstorm and no one else is there, so you're smart.
Exactly.
The rest of us who go there when it's really busy understand exactly what the point you're making.
Yeah. No. And that would be the intermingling at the Costco with my mask on, both in going through to pick out my beautiful items and then going into the check. Out would be exactly my interaction at a hockey game, right? I mean, I'm going around, I'm getting my concessions or not concessions, anyways, whatever. And I'm going to
You're eating drink.
Yeah, and I'm going to sit down. Mm-hmm. I don't really, and you know, and again, from an Ottawa Senators perspective, financially, well, this isn't the Toronto Maple Leafs and what you went through last year, where you know you said, hey, we'll continue with the business, but Ottawa, for lots of different reasons, JR, there was a couple years before that where financially. You're into about year four here where, hey, this is a major, major hit on your business. And I can understand why you'd be really disappointed. Not to mention, if this kind of continues through the end of the year, I mean, you're once again starting from almost scratch as far as trying to rebuild your fan base. And as you said, that usually lags a year behind. So it to me just does not make any sense. And hopefully they can put some pressure on the government and get things changed around sooner than later.
Yeah, I think if the situation was reversed and it was the Leafs. That we're going to be harder hit, and listen, it's a huge hit to the bottom line of the Leafs. Don't get me wrong, but they're in a better position to be able to sustain that.
Yeah.
MLSE. All that to say, the other thing is, I mean, they just announced the reschedule and pushing all of these games. And the reason the games with Ottawa were postponed in the first place was not because they couldn't field a big enough team because of COVID. There were a couple of games with that, but because of the restrictions that were in place. So, okay, well, they move everything or a bunch of the games into February, and now February is going to roll around. And so the way it's going to work out, the restrictions that will remain in place, the same ones as now, so that's three games next week that they will have zero fans, and then eight games between January 31st, including a visit by Connor McDavid, who is still a huge draw, in case you haven't noticed, home games between January 31st and February 21st, in which the Sens will be maxed out at 500 fans.
Yeah.
They haven't said that. People have said, like, why even bother at 500? I would think 500 is better than none, but I don't know. But whatever it is, it's an incredibly low number, and that is an incredible hit to the bottom line.
Yeah, it really is. And whatever the equation is, I'll go in and around. Between Belleville and Ottawa, 100 million Canadian you're spending on salary, JR. It's a real, real big hit for any team and certainly for a smaller market like Ottawa.
And the concern will be, again, this is a bottom line and budget-driven team, as we've seen for several seasons now, and the impact on the bottom line. Now, listen, I know a lot of people that don't like the owner for a lot of different reasons, but who amongst us wouldn't look at this situation and, you know, if they had to make some hard decisions and unpopular ones, wouldn't look at it and go, yeah, man, they've lost a lot of money in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And the last year, now this being the season we're in right now, you know, with their hands tied behind their back because of the way that the government has decided to handle this.
Yeah.
And remains to be seen. Maybe the owner will do what I think fans hope that he does, and they've done so far, which is they've signed all the names that they want to sign for the most part. But if we get into the summer and into next season and some decisions on contracts for other players have to be made, and we see one that isn't completed because of budgetary issues, reflecting on the fact that they haven't had the opportunity to have full buildings or even half full buildings for half of the season or whatever it is, that may come to pass, and that's going to be too bad.
Yeah, it is. But as you said, I don't disrespect it, and I would understand it. Now, this is also, and I would say one positive personally, we talked about, would you end up moving guys between now and the trade deadline? Well, if I can get Tierney off the books, who's making $4.2 million for whatever time, now, I don't know if there's any value, but I'd do it in a minute. And so maybe that sways you that way. But you also forecasted the summer, and I would say legitimate buyout candidates would be Murray, White, in Del Zotto, well, there's not a chance if I'm ownership I'm going to stroke a check in the middle of summertime for any of them. So what kind of a squeeze does that put on bringing those three guys automatically back? Mm-hmm. Zaitsev has a $2 million signing bonus coming in the summertime. So money that has not been allocated properly, it could become a major, major problem this summer.
Right. All right, so again, I think there's some lobbying going on behind the scenes to get things changed, but I'm hard-pressed to think the government's going to change their mind on this, right? I mean, there are, you know, we have the Ontario Science Table that's saying that, you know, even opening things up on January 31st is too aggressive a timeline based on the fact that kids are just getting back in school now and, you know, the way that the spread can lag in terms of people testing positive, et cetera, can be 2 to 3 weeks, and then it gets into society from there. That's an aggressive timeline. That's Science Table saying that. The government is saying, no, we're gonna at least partially open things January 31st. So it's an ongoing debate. You know, everybody's got their opinions on this. I'm just a guy looking for consistency. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I just want consistency in decisions that are made and common sense in decisions that are made. And that seems to be, in my opinion, in short order with the decisions that have been made and announced throughout this entire thing, but including yesterday.
Yeah.
All right, your thoughts, welcome. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. Again, standard messaging rates apply when you do text us. We'll talk to Dave Poulin about all things hockey when he joins us after 8 o'clock this morning as we continue along here for a Friday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200. 7:46 here on a Friday morning. JR, Simmer, and Hammer with you. Dave Poulin is our TSN hockey insider, and he'll join us in about 20, 25 minutes from now. Dave did. The Sens-Pens game last night on the TV side, a 6-4 Pittsburgh win. Ottawa has traveled on to Washington. Practice at the, where's the thing, in Virginia? Capsplex or Plex, whatever it's called.
Beautiful.
Right? 11:30 this morning, and Sens and Caps tomorrow night, and then Sens and Blue Jackets from Columbus on Sunday before Ottawa returns home to play. Oh, the Buffalo Sabres again in an empty building coming up on Tuesday. All games, of course, right here on TSN 1200. We'll also have tonight the Ottawa 67s back in action, unfortunately, in an empty TD Place Arena hosting the Niagara Ice Dogs. 67s played in Peterborough last night, a game you heard on 580 CFRA. They had a 3-1 lead after one. Unfortunately, Pete's come back, 3 in the second and another in the third, and they win it 5-3. No Tyler Boucher again this weekend. I don't exactly have talked to Kenny Walls about it, and apparently he's still dealing with injuries of some sort. And I'm not sure if this is things that have, because he hadn't played since, you know, the university, so he had played since at BU since early December, made the decision over Christmas to come to the 67s. At that point, had contracted COVID as well, came up here. Okay, there was the COVID thing, skated with Belleville for one of the weekends. And then was held out with Ottawa because Ottawa was off the ice. The 67s were because they had their own COVID issues. And then, but for the past week or so, when it seemed like it was on track for him to join the 67s, I guess it hasn't been happening. I'm not sure exactly why, but he will not play this weekend as well.
Yeah, and I guess interesting when you come up here and obviously dealing with the Sens doctors and whatever it is. But, yeah, hopefully he gets healthy, gets up and running, and maybe that was part of his struggles when he was at BU.
All right, on text at 12-1200, when you text us, standard messaging rates apply on the, hey, why is Costco wide open and, you know, nobody can go to a Sens game and that whole thing. People all wear masks at Costco. 1 in 10 wears a mask at a sports event. It's just that simple. That's from Unsigned. And someone else texted in and said 9,000 people trying to leave at the same time is the issue. So those are a couple of feedback on the flip side of things.
Yeah, respect all those ideas or thoughts. Yeah.
My question is, if Matt Murray's good enough to be in the press box in Pittsburgh, he's good enough to be on the ice tomorrow. Time's running out on this guy. Doesn't show any drive. Do you think he would have wanted the net against Pittsburgh last night? That's from Putter.
You know what? Hey, that's just my personal opinion, JR. Opening night, very bizarre to me. But I don't know the fella, and I'm not a doctor. But, man, if you can practice, and there was even talk about him backing up, well, if you're in the press box as well, if you are suffering from whatever, I would prefer either you didn't go on the trip or for the 4 hours last night in the middle of the winter, I'd prefer you resting up in your hotel room. But I'm not in charge.
Now, I wonder if the only reason he's at the rink last night is because they were going to have, and I'm saying it's the right decision, but was it because it was his first game back in Pittsburgh since he was traded here to Ottawa? And they wanted to do something for him. And there's only one other game between the two teams, and it's here in Ottawa next month. So if you didn't get your tribute last night, you obviously didn't have it last season. They didn't play at Pittsburgh at all. You weren't going to do it this year. And so you had to wait till next year. 3 years down the road would have felt maybe odd at that point. So I'm not saying it's the right decision. Yeah. But I wonder if that's in the thinking as well.
My thinking, and I understand that, JR. First of all, I couldn't care less in a sense of you're in a press box. What I would say is, well, you know what's even better? Why don't we get you up and running, and next year, why don't you be a starting goaltender when we come back to Pittsburgh, which would make a whole lot more sense. But I understand that. But as I said, I still, if you follow it a year in now, JR, as I say, this isn't just a one-off. I mean, I've just been uncomfortable with both what I see and what I hear and what is a carryover from a couple years in Pittsburgh, where there's a trend here of, you know, again, I'll just use that term. It's just a roller coaster on and off the ice with the fella.
Okay, elsewhere around the NHL last night, it was busy. Here was a big moment for Ottawa and Ottawa area hockey fans.
Here's Quinn to the circle looking for his first in the National Hockey League. He'll this time spray it down low. Skinner snaps it across. Thompson to Darlene. Neat pass for Quinn. Walks in. Fire scores! There it is!
There it was, indeed. Jack Quinn's first NHL goal for the Buffalo Sabres last night in what eventually would be a one-goal loss. To the Dallas Stars. Beautiful picture, by the way, the Sabres put up on their Twitter last night of him. And we all see the first goal puck, but just the look on his face, you can just tell it's always quite a moment when someone gets their first NHL goal. For him to do it in, I think his second game, right? It was a beautiful shot. Like anybody that watched Jack Quinn with the 67s, that was ready-made. It was almost the exact same type of goals that he would score here in Ottawa. So beautiful shot, beautiful moment for him last night, unfortunately, in a losing cause.
Yeah, no, it is. And for him, it's a great story, JR, and was so pleasantly surprised going to watch him play and watching Rossi. And I just looked at a young kid and you looked at the learning curve and thought, hey, maybe take a little longer, even as a late birthday, before he come from, I don't know, want to say track into Batherson, but it reminds me of the same story. And he's just such a talented player. Sounds like he's really putting the work in off the ice. And yeah, I think he's going to be a real nice NHL player. I don't think you're going to say wow every time, but much like Batherson, he's real smart, shoots a puck real well. And like I say, it's been a really, really nice progression and development for him so far.
Boston played Washington. This game went down to the final minute. It was tied at 3.
Far circle protects. Into the slot. McAvoy shoots. He scores! Charlie McAvoy with a rocket on the power play. He sizzles it under the bar. And the Bruins with a 4-3 lead with 45 seconds left.
Yeah, and that would be the game winner and the final goal in a 4-3 Bruins win. But the victory comes at a cost. It's Brad Marchand. And there's probably more than a few hockey fans that didn't mind seeing Garnet Hathaway kind of fill him in right in the corner. And the Bruins were not happy with the hit. Marchand was kind of tied up with another Washington player, and then Hathaway kind of came in, and Marchand is in a bit of a vulnerable position, and he finished him hard into the corner, and Marchand injured his right shoulder. And it was interesting. I was going to say it was funny. It's not funny. But Boston scored a goal with him still sitting on the bench. And he tried to raise his arms in celebration, and his right arm got halfway up, and it's like, nope, that's not going any further. And he went back down on the bench and eventually left the game. Did not return. Looks like potentially could be a significant injury. We'll wait and see on that, but that would be a huge injury for Boston with no Marchand.
No, it really is. Hey,
what did you think of the hit?
Want to start? A little iffy, a little awkward. There's no doubt, JR. I mean, the bigger hit in that game ended up being Tom Wilson. That's just a monster of a man and a clean hit. But no, I thought it was awkward. And yeah, with Marchand, to me, he's crossed past any of the worrying about. To me, he's such a likable character. Did you even read the little story there that the Hayes family had put out that he's been going over and playing with the 2-year-old Bo? He's been playing street hockey. Like, he's just a good guy. He's a star player. So disappointed to see it. But when you play against Washington and you are Boston, these are going to be real, real physical games. I think that's developed into a real nice rivalry.
Florida beat Edmonton 6-0. Oh my God. Yeah, so it's 7 straight losses now for the Oilers. They play Calgary tomorrow. Do you think somebody gets fired or somebody gets traded before that game?
You know what?
When does the other shoe has to, at some point the other shoe is going to drop. if the losing continues?
Yeah, I'd say the coaching change is coming first, Jer, only because as far as a trade, I do believe in the case of Kenny Holland, unless he's on the hot seat, I don't think he's going to go out and do anything foolish. Even in Detroit, it was always about the patience. And realistically, the trade is, where's your goaltender? And so, as I said, I don't know how many options there are. And you don't, hey, I think any coach realizes this, no matter how good you are. Even in, I mean, Philly's crazy for the roller coaster they go on every year where they win 10, lose 10, lose 10 more. I feel like with Dave Tippett, the energy and everything else, and to your point, you just have to do something, right? And if you can't make a trade, then I'm going to probably, I like Tipster, but I'm going to say there'll be a coaching change.
Okay, 7:55, huge football weekend ahead. It's the divisional playoffs this weekend, four games for it for many people. This is actually the best, first of all, in terms of the number of games, there being four, and you're bringing the teams that got byes into the fold now as well. So you're getting rid of the riffraff that just squeezed in. You're getting the best of the best. For many people, this is the best football weekend of the season. So our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today: if you could only watch one of the four games this weekend, which one are you watching? I can guarantee Bengals-Titans will be last in the voting, but we included it. 49ers-Packers is the primetime game on Saturday night from the Rosendundra Lambeau Field. Sunday afternoon game, 3 o'clock kickoff, Rams versus Bucks. And then the, I think it's 6:30 or 6:40 kickoff from Kansas City between the Bills and the Chiefs. Yeah. So, Simmer, which game are you watching?
Power ranking.
Where are my Pats? Where are my Pats?
Hey, stop it.
Hey, national radio audience listening on our World Junior pregame show to this guy you may or may not know from Ottawa, who the first thing out of his mouth is in talking about the World Junior pregame show is, yeah, watch my Pats lose this afternoon.
And I just had a bat.
Anyway,
it was even more awkward. I was on with Jim Taddy on his show after that. And I told him, I just had a moment like Wolf of Wall Street. I said, my girlfriend's naked in the bathtub, and my decision was, should I go on the show with you or go into the tub? But I feel like as well, JR, that that's kind of targeting and bullying me. So who is our HR person?
She's also a fan of my Pats.
Oh, that's so good. I'm going my power ranking is I'm most interested in the Bucks game, then the Bills Chiefs, and then it would be 49ers Green Bay.
Yeah.
And then of course the last one. I'm as interested with Stafford. I like him as well. The Bills Chiefs I know will be a heavyweight match, but I'll go Bucks Rams.
Okay. Hammer.
Yeah, it's a three horse race for me as well, but I'm leaning towards the Packers and the 49ers. Mm. I think this one's really interesting. Just Aaron Rodgers, to me, he's just not a playoff performer, and I think he has something to prove here. And the 49ers, hopefully on the defensive side, they're healthy, so there's no excuses.
Bosa looks like he's on track to play, is the word.
But they're a fun team to watch right now, and I don't like saying that, being a Seattle Seahawks fan. Offensively, it's fun, minus the quarterback, and defensively, it's fun. So I'm kind of leaning towards a bit of an upset here. So if I need to pick one, I'm looking at the 49ers and Packers.
Early cat out of the bag for the post 9 o'clock picks. Maybe going for the upset special on the Niners. Well, I'm an NFC football guy ahead of the AFC. And I'm more interested in 49ers Packers than Rams Bucks. But this Bills Chiefs game, I got to tell you, man, those two teams maybe the best two teams in football right now. And somebody's going home early who thought they were going home late, as a wise man once said. So it's between the two primetime games for me. Ah, goodness. Yeah. You know what? I think I'm on, and it's only because I have a little of NFC bias. So I'm going to go 49ers Packers. But Bills Chiefs is a close, close second. And then further down the list is Rams Bucks. And then last is Bengals Titans. But I'm telling you what right now, I'm watching all four of those games this weekend. I'm not limiting myself to one. So screw your web poll question of the day, TSN 1200.
Yeah, and that I'll say that, Jared. Like, normally, if this was even a Marvin Lewis Bengals team, I'd probably be kind of feeling the same way. But Burrow has that star power right now to bring in, and Titans are fun to watch. So even for the fourth place, as I agree with you. And then to the other three, you know, and again, you can't even, I know it sounds funny, you can't even lie. Like I said, Green Bay, San Francisco, a hell of a game, but it's easily third for me, you know, because as I said, Bills and Chiefs and Rams for what they've built up and trying to go on the road, and they'll have to probably win, what, two more road games, and then they get to go back and host the Super Bowl if they can knock off Tampa and then maybe knock off Green Bay.
All right, your thoughts are welcome. Go to our website, tsn1200.ca. Click down the right-hand rail and vote on our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question of the day. You can only watch one playoff game this weekend. Which one are you picking? I can tell you that the voting is very lopsided on our web poll question. All right, we'll take a break. 8 o'clock, top of the hour news and sports update. More detail on the Sens 6-4 loss in Pitt. And we'll come back and talk about it with our TSN hockey insider, Dave Poulin, coming up next right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.